Tonight, I have to sit down and tackle two giant forms. I can feel my brain turning to sludge already. So they're complicated and they're annoying, but for some of us, forms can be a barrier to full participation in society. What about you? Have you found forms overwhelming or difficult to complete, or you just don't fit their default settings? Dr. Jeremiah Brown is a lecturer with the Public Service Research Group at the University of New South Wales Canberra Business School. Jeremiah, welcome to you.
Hi, Hilary. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you with us. And Emma King is the CEO of the Victorian Council of Social Service, VCOS. Hi, Emma.
Hi, Hilary. Great to be with you.
I think it's a really good combination of people to be having this discussion with, actually. Jerry, let's start with you. There are, you know, forms for when we're born, when we get married, when we die. You talk about this idea, though, of administrative burden in your research. What does that mean and when does it come into play?
Right. So at a really simple level, administrative burden in the literature is described as an individual's experience of a policy's implementation as onerous. And really, it just means, like, is a policy or program hard for us to access or use?
So, I mean, that could be anything from just it's a bit annoying to use this form, but right down the material effects end of that spectrum, what might you see?
Yeah, right. So there's sort of three kinds of costs that we think about quite a lot when we're looking at a policy's implementation. You can have learning costs. So things can be hard to find out about, right? Like if we think about when the pandemic hit, it was hard to actually find out if you were going to be eligible for the coronavirus payments that were eligible through employers. Like, did my contract conditions meet the right thing? So that's like kind of a learning cost about understanding things.
Yeah, because you have to spend some time, don't you, finding that stuff out?
Right. It's two things. Often it's the time consumption to learn about it, but it's also knowing where to go and find the information. That can be the biggest problem, like finding access to the information. Then you can also get compliance and psychological costs attached to things. So compliance costs are often with meeting the costs of administrative demands. It can be the time it takes to do things. Like you were talking about, you've got a couple of long forms staring you down this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then it can also be the effort, or it can be financial costs associated with meeting those demands as well.
Okay, so you might have to, say, source documents.
Yeah, sourcing and maintaining documents. It can be things like the recent work that I've done on this was looking at what's required to apply for the NDIS, and you need to have an eligible or you need to make sure that you have a recent medical examination, so it needs to be within the last 12 months. Actually, if you think about what it takes to access medical services and particularly through the pandemic, that might actually be more challenging to meet. And so you might need to pay to access a GP instead of doing it through Medicare. And there's all these kinds of financial and then also time costs that can pop up.
And when you talk about psychological costs, that's a really interesting one to look at in relation to the NDIS, isn't it, Jerry?
Yeah, right. So you can have them on the application side, and it can be things like making people present the worst version of themselves. If you have a high degree of variability in the way that you functional across, let's say, just a week. So maybe 2 days out of the week, you're going to need significant care support. But then for the other 5 days in the week, you're actually okay. If we think about a strengths-based model of disability, the idea is that we want to present the strongest version of ourselves. But if you need to access the support, you have to present the worst version and really speak to the challenges that you face. And then you can also experience psychological costs through stigma attached to things. So if we think about like the cashless welfare card, there are a lot of negative emotional experiences for people who are using it within the community. And that was really strong feedback that we got around that from recent research that covered the topic.
Yeah, I think about the NDIS psychological costs a lot. My son has Down syndrome. So for, you know, 95% of our lives, we're presenting this face to the world of, you know, here are his strengths, consider his strengths and what he can do and how he can be a functional, enriching part of society. And then that other 5% of the time you're saying, we need this stuff, because it's terrible. Mm. And it's such a weird cognitive dissonance moment. I totally understand what you're talking about. We're speaking with Dr. Jeremiah Brown. Jerry's a lecturer with the Public Service Research Group at the University of New South Wales Canberra Business School about administrative burdens and who they filter out of which processes. Now, we're speaking today too with Emma King, who's the CEO of the Victorian Council of Social Service. And Emma, VCOS has just done a listening tour around the state of Victoria and heard from marginalised people. What did you hear about their experiences filling in forms?
Well, and it goes to the point, one of the points actually that you just raised, Hilary, which is sitting in front of the computer and filling in a form. And we know that around Australia, there's about 900,000 households that actually don't have in-home internet access. And everywhere that we went around the state, and also backed up by some phone polling, we heard kind of two key messages. One is a lot of people don't have access to the internet. They don't have devices. They find things complex. And it was really highlighted during COVID when people couldn't download, for example, their vaccination certificate, so weren't able to show them. Challenging, going through MyGov and all those sorts of things. It was hard, but also a lot of people didn't have devices. We did this in conjunction with Neighbourhood Houses Victoria, and one of the neighbourhood houses that we went to, there were three families sharing one phone. So the notion that they could all have their vaccination certificates downloaded was impossible. And people also, everywhere we went, they said, we're just pushed online. We're pushed online for everything. For a whole lot of people, they didn't have access. And they also just said, I just want to talk to someone. I've got a really simple question. I'm not sure how to answer this bit. I just want to be able to talk to someone for a hand. So it was a really clear thing that came out.
Well, and a lot of the services say, look, we do have the phone lines. They're there for people who are in that situation, who have those needs and can't access them elsewhere. How well do those phone support services work?
Well, I think it's fair to say, we've seen this with, with Centrelink and other things over time, that they don't work terribly well. Sometimes they do, and we've got some examples of things that do work well, but they often work well for some people. So it's about, are they well enough staffed? We've got a good example in Victoria in recent times where actually the reforms around our rental laws have made, the prescribed forms much simpler, and they include information about, being able to contact a phone translating and interpreting service that's in the top 10 languages. I guess the issue is if you're outside of those top 10 languages, then where do you go for help? But we've seen, it is important to call out that in some cases there are improvements. And there was an inquiry into adult literacy and its importance last year, March 2022, actually this year, I should say. And it has really strong recommendations. And one of them is that by March 2023, mm-hmm. that the Australian government should establish funding for community organisations to assist Australians with form filling and literacy mediation, and to provide telephone support lines for people who can't attend physical services or who need a hand. So there's really strong recommendations.
I mean, but is that a useful way to go, to outsource that help with filling out government forms away from government?
Well, I reckon it's a good point that you raise, because ideally forms should be designed for people, right? Everyone should be able to fill them in. Knowing though, for example, that some people a lot of people actually don't have internet access, etc., it's kind of saying, well, actually, let's look at our ecosystem, our social ecosystem, and let's make it easy as possible for people, so wherever people go, we can provide them with assistance. So in the first instance, you should just be able to fill out your form, let's face it. But in the meanwhile, let's look at what we can do to actually make sure people can go somewhere. So another example in Victoria was the power saving bonus that's out there at the moment. We know lots of people have gone into physical spaces, so whether that be their library, whether that be their community legal centre, whether that be their neighbourhood house, or community and information support, to actually make sure they can get that power saving bonus, and also to find out that it's there and they're eligible for it in the first place, because lots of people don't know what concessions they're eligible for. Our research has shown that there's about 15% of people who are not getting all of the concessions that they're eligible for. So it's also about who's missing out and what can we put around that to actually make sure no one should be missing out.
There's a really interesting set of Facebook comments. Marianne says, I've taken early super rather than be on Job Seeker. I hate dealing with Centrelink. She says, in a few years' time when I'm eligible for the age pension, I'll brace myself and deal with Centrelink again. But that's an example of someone who's chosen and they have the choice not to access the things that they are actually entitled to. Text messages coming in too. Richard says, as a functional 60-year-old retiree, I find filling out forms, government or non-government, extremely frustrating. I pity those without the skills to deal with them. And Sally in Hurlston Park says, even with tertiary qualifications, my experience filling out government forms has been really horrible. Worse, there's no one to ask. I wonder what kind of testing they do and who with. Well, Dr. Jeremiah Brown, lecturer with the Public Service Research Group at the University of New South Wales, Canberra Business School. How did we get here? Is this an intentional filtering process or is it an accident of bureaucratic history?
Right. So I think it can be both. On the one hand, for most of the things we want, particularly in a targeted welfare state, there's going to inherently be a trade-off between collecting the required and necessary information for making sure we can make the kind of assessment that we need. Again, like coming back to the NDIS example, actually, we do need to know some information about people to assess their eligibility. At the same time, there can be the introduction of filtering questions and mechanisms that, and you've sort of touched on this already, but they disproportionately disadvantage and make it harder for people who live more complex lives and have more complex circumstances. And that tends to be the more vulnerable members of our community.
Well, and on that, I mean, some people might think, really, how hard are these questions? Can you give us an example of something that looks like a simple question on the surface but can actually trip people up?
Yeah, right. So a really simple question that everyone has an answer to is your date of birth, right? And we all sort of understand, oh, well, everyone's got one date of birth. We actually have a process for people who don't know what their date of birth is. We assign them one based on the year that they're born. But if we think about housing, now most people, it's a simple question, what's your home address? But for some people who live in a complex housing arrangement, who might be experiencing homelessness or in transition housing, actually putting your address on the form becomes complicated. Which address should you use? Can you even say that, actually, I don't have a stable address at the moment and still continue to complete the form? And there's actually, it turns out, a lot of questions that we get asked that are more complex than face value. I'll use actually an example from myself. I'm getting married in a couple of weeks.
Oh, congratulations.
Pretty exciting. Thank you. And I was completing the notice of intent to marry form. And my dad alternates between using 3 and 4 names, and he doesn't use his original first name in most situations. And I had to call him and check, what's your legal name for what I'm putting on the form? And he didn't know. He's like, well, on some documents it's this, on other documents it's that. So he had to go back and search. And it's sort of like a pretty funny example. It wasn't really a problem for me in the end, but for people who also you have to maintain these legal documents, a lot of the time you've got to refer back to your birth certificate, that can be a hassle to go and find that to check the information, especially when you're relying on the information from someone else, not just yourself.
Yeah. And Jerry, does it differ between the public sector and the private sector when it comes to how complicated these forms are and how much they filter people out?
Right. So there's this interesting thing that goes on between the difference. You might think about it as the profit motive, right? So there's for private companies, they want you to complete the form. If they're trying to sell you something or whatever it is, their goal is ensuring that you complete it. So they want the fewest possible filtering mechanisms that there could be. Whereas if we think about it from accessing services and social services, if you don't access the service, the government technically makes the benefit of not having to pay for you to access the service. So there's a kind of perverse incentive there that means that they're not losing a customer, so to speak, in the way that a private enterprise is. And so the smoothness of the process then is a little bit less of a concern for them.
What a fascinating topic we're discussing today with Dr. Jeremiah Brown, lecturer with the Public Service Research Group in the University of New South Wales Canberra Business School, and Emma King, the CEO of the Victorian Council of Social Service. And they've both been looking at this, the administrative burden on particular groups of people and how that affects their lives when every aspect of our life is mediated by forms. Many, many texts coming in on this. One says, I'm in the process of applying for the disability support pension. I'm not stupid, but applying for this, you must have the correct wording, otherwise it's not considered. Use a service to assist with this, but if you don't know of these services, those that really need it just won't get it. And another saying, I agree with the psychological distress of having to present the worst of yourself. We were discussing this in relation to the NDIS. It's awful, says this person. I end up feeling like I have to wander through life telling the powers that be that I'm a hopeless loser. Jerry, is it understandable if, to an extent, bureaucracies are prioritising filtering out potential cheats at the cost of genuine people in need of services? How do we find that balance?
Right. So I think one of the things that we really do need to continually remember, right, is like these trade-offs are an inherent part of using a targeting mechanism. So we're going to have to make some of them. But ultimately, we need to be thinking, in my view, we need to be thinking about who most need to access these services, right? And where we are sort of straddling that line between trying to filter out people that we think aren't entitled to a service, as opposed to ensuring that people who can get this or who are eligible or able to get the service, the more questions we place, the more that people need to provide evidence for things, the more likely it is that the most vulnerable people get filtered out, because they're likely to have those additional challenges in maybe it's complying with a particular question. Or, and I also think back to the example the person had texted in to talk about with applying for and getting the right wording for the disability support pension. On that kind of example, it's also how you can present yourself in the language of bureaucracy, right? So like our government kind of has ways that it prefers us to explain the problems that we experience comparative to less commonly used language. And so if you use the right language, if you use the right wording, you're more likely to get that support. And interestingly, the further away from or the more complex your experience is, it's also the less likely you're going to be using the language of bureaucracy.
Yep, it's a weird thing I find to have both a university education and an extensive experience of Centrelink, because that is an oddly useful skill set. Emma King, your view on this, do we need to balance the potential for fraud with ease of access to these bureaucratic processes?
Yeah, and look, particularly when we look at, you know, around Centrelink, et cetera, whenever we hear, you know, in the previous government, they go out and say, we're going to save these millions of dollars by clawing it back. And, you know, they never did, because, you know, and there is a balance here. But when we look at, for example, people who've got, you know, non-English speaking people, people without homes, or, you know, people with a range of circumstances that make filling out forms hard. And just thinking about, for example, working with someone more recently who was looking, they were trying to get a job. And even filling in the form to be able, they didn't have their birth certificate, going to the points that Jerry was making earlier, they didn't have their birth certificate and they don't have a driver's license. So they couldn't provide their kind of 100 points. And it was going to be like 6 weeks to get the birth certificate. And if you wanted it earlier, you had to pay more. So again, there was a matter of filling out a form. It wasn't easy. They kept ringing birth, deaths and marriages, and they were constantly told to go online. There's a cost attached. And basically, it was just made really hard. So there's this whole part around going, how do we make this easy for people? You're right around, of course we need, if you're giving someone a birth certificate, we've got to look at how we provide proof. But again, for someone who's homeless or someone who's in difficult circumstances, that's not easy. And there's no, I can't understand the reason for a 6 week delay for communication that's actually, you know, by the time you've then got that, that job's disappeared out the door. Yep. So that's a real issue for people about, there's a whole piece here about, as you say, what's there for bureaucracy, the balance about what do we genuinely need and how do we provide for people. And I think it's interesting when we look at the example with Optus over recent times and looking at the data that they've got about people and saying, what of that do they really need? And, you know, we've seen a pretty horrific example of how that data is now being shared. But there's a balance there as well about how much data is required, let alone, as you say, how much of it is in kind of plain English rather than government speak, because we're literally looking at forms of discrimination here. Generally, they're designed, it's very Anglo-middle class.
Yep. Plain English and letting the people involved in filling out the forms help design the forms were some of the key things I found in the reading around this. It's been really fascinating discussing this with you both today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Hilary.
Pleasure.
Thanks Emma, for having us.
It's a pleasure. Emma King, CEO of the Victorian Council of Social Service, VCOS, and Dr. Jeremiah Brown, lecturer with the Public Service Research Group at the University of New South Wales, Canberra Business School. And I'll leave you with a Facebook comment. Pam tried to apply for job seeker support during COVID. Took my husband a week to upload everything. He's a professional in the digital industry.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.